Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, have you heard the latest about the Obama administration's efforts to silence science, real science, science specifically that is dealing with this subject of climate change? This was a story that appeared just a few days ago, or maybe about a week ago, I guess, out of the Star Telegram. It says this: climate deniers could face civil racketeering charges. Yeah, you heard that right. Climate deniers could face civil racketeering charges. And this isn't just hearsay or some sort of speculation taking place. The article goes on to say this. It says, in testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee on March 9th, U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch confirmed that the Justice Department has asked the FBI to look into statements by so-called climate deniers. Her comments came in response to questions from Rhode Island Democrat Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. Whitehouse has long wanted the government to consider civil racketeering charges against those whose scientific opinions on the subject of global warming are contrary to the findings of the Obama administration. Writing in the Washington Post in May of last year, he cited what he said were, quote, striking, unquote, parallels between what the tobacco industry did in denying harm from their products to those in the energy sector who he believes may be doing the same when denying impacts from the use of fossil fuels. Again, in October, this time writing for the Huffington Post, he called for those whose opinions he disagrees with to face, quote, an actual impartial judge or jury, unquote, to defend their statements. Lynch's reply to him last week seemed to suggest that such an opportunity might be in the working stages. Quote, this matter has been discussed, she said. We have received information about it, and we have referred it to the FBI to consider whether or not it meets the criteria for which we could take action on. Well, that's certainly chilling, isn't it? Talk about global warming or global cooling or climate change. Well, here's a chilling effect for that the FBI has now been tasked with finding out what they can do with those that deny at least the administration's mantra about global warming or climate change. And so this is certainly something that needs to be discussed. And here to help us to do that is Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. Dr. Beisner is the founder and the national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. That's a network of about 60 Christian theologians, natural scientists, economists, and other scholars that are educating for a biblical earth stewardship and economic development for the poor. Dr. Beisner, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks very much, Kevin. It's great to be with you, and it's great not to be in prison.
Yes, exactly.
You know, the last little bit of that comment that you quoted from Attorney General Loretta Lynch is particularly concerning. She says that she had referred the matter to the FBI to see if these things met the criteria for which we could take action. A number of commentators have noticed that word choice there. It's not She didn't say for which we would take action. It's for which we could take action. That implies that her mind is already made up as to what she wants to do. She wants to take action. She wants to bring some sort of civil or criminal investigation against those who question dangerous man-made global warming. She's now looking out to find out, are we able to get the evidence that we need to take that kind of action? That, I think, is a matter of grave concern. I mean, essentially, this is a huge threat to the First Amendment. And Senator Whitehouse's attempt to draw an analogy between this and the cover-up of important information, data, medical data, by the tobacco industry is, I think, a dreadfully short, wrong analogy. Here's why. Frankly, the scientific evidence that smoking caused harm, direct harm, to those who smoked was overwhelming. It was really clear. We had a clear understanding of the chemical path by which it happened. We understood. We had overwhelming epidemiological data of the strong correlation between smoking and cancer, and that was just simply not something about which there was significant question. In the case of human influence on global warming, there is enormous debate among real scientists, among real climatologists, real meteorologists, real astrophysicists, real atmospheric physicists, and atmospheric chemists, and so on, all along a huge spectrum of opinion, all the way from global warming is real and very dangerous, and human activity is the primary cause of it, and we would be justified in spending trillions of dollars to try to help it, even if that means we slow the economic development of 2 billion people in the world and trap them in poverty for future generations. All the way from there down to, global warming has been happening over the last century and a half or thereabouts. It's largely natural. Human activity probably contributes something to it, but most likely so little as not to be measurable. And whatever the risks might be, we can't have enough impact on it by reducing our use of fossil fuels to make any significant difference, and therefore it certainly isn't worth spending trillions of dollars and trapping billions of people in poverty. Mm. And everything between those, all of those different positions, are represented by serious scholars. And what that means is that you just cannot make the analogy between this and the tobacco industry.
Mm-hmm. When I think about the RICO Act or law here, I think about the mafia or something along
exactly.
that line, you know, where it was enacted. That stands for the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. And I just, most of the time, that was something that we had organized crime that was using resources in order to raise money and so forth, if I could put it that way, through criminal
yeah.
activities.
That's
hardly
exactly
meets
what
the
Congress.
Yeah,
that's exactly what Congress intended to target in creating RICO. Was that kind of thing. They had no intention that kind of law would be used to go after people who disagree on political policy, who disagree on scientific questions, who disagree on ethical questions or anything like that. And yet we saw the Clinton administration back in the 90s attempt to use RICO to prosecute pro-life organizations that organized protests at abortion clinics.
Mm.
And now we're seeing the Obama administration considering using RICO to prosecute scientists and economists and others who are making the case that human activity is not the primary cause of global warming, and human influence on global warming is not overwhelmingly dangerous, and it does not make sense to spend trillions of dollars trying to reduce it when that means trapping billions of people in poverty.
Mm-hmm. It seems that this statement that was made by Loretta Lynch, that it was designed not so much for an individual as much as it would be for corporations, right? That they're threatening that if you're making money in some way, like maybe a coal industry or some sort of energy producing entity, that and you do this without taking into consideration that harm could come from it, we're going to come after you in some way with this RICO law. Am I right in interpreting that?
Well, I think partly right. The argument for a broader interpretation of that is that even people who are not involved in corporations, some of those people have ties to various corporations. And you could argue that some of them have opportunity to make some profit from pushing their ideas. But, of course, the same holds true, by the way, for the people on the other side of this debate.
Mm-hmm.
The governments spend thousands of times as much money funding scientists who do research favorable to belief in dangerous man-made global warming as any corporations spend funding scientists who do research contrary to that idea. And so one could just as well say that if those researchers who are favoring the alarmist scenario can be shown to be ignoring the harm that comes to people by means of the policies that they promote, namely slowing economic development, trapping people in poverty, and therefore in the higher rates of disease and premature death that invariably come with poverty, well, maybe we should use RICO on them. But you are correct. The more narrow focus, the more immediate focus, is going to be on corporations. And to this extent, this is a correct understanding. Namely, the First Amendment protects freedom of speech. It does not protect fraud. And in law, fraud is defined as a situation in which someone knowingly, knowingly conveys false information or withholds true information in order to, in order to cause harm to someone else or financial benefit to oneself. That's fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And it's appropriate to, for government to prosecute fraud. However, the notion that you would be able to prove fraud in this sort of a case, I think is just extremely slim, precisely because there are so many scientists, so many economists, so many ethicists who hold all different positions on this. And one can equally argue that if you are promoting the position that we should reduce our use of fossil fuels in order to fight global warming, you are putting people at risk by that. Because our use of fossil fuels provides the abundant, affordable, reliable energy without which no society can rise or stay out of poverty. And poverty brings high risks of disease and premature death.
Mm.
So, in other words, you are suppressing information, suppressing true information, in a way that can cause harm to other people. So you might be guilty of fraud. Now, the real case is simply this. This is an issue where open debate, where scientific research and vigorous controversy is absolutely essential to the progress of our knowledge. And the mere threat of bringing civil, let alone criminal, investigation and possible prosecution puts just a chilling effect on that open debate. But open debate is absolutely essential to the health of science and to the health of public policy.
Cal, you make a convincing case about fossil fuels when you put it that way. Are you guys actually offering right now on your website, I saw a work entitled Fossil Fuels, The Moral Case. Is that something that you're offering right now to those that get involved?
Yes, we are.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, we are. It's a wonderful study by Kathleen Hartnett-White, Fossil Fuels, The Moral Case. And if anybody comes to cornwallalliance.org and clicks on the donate button there, we will send a copy of this free of charge as our way of saying thank you to anybody who makes a donation, literally of any size. In fact, if somebody just simply writes to us or calls us and says, hey, I want this, and I can't make a donation at all, but I want this, we'll send it to you. So the place to go is cornwallalliance.org. That's cornwallalliance.org. Probably the easiest way to get the information you need to get this is to subscribe to our free email newsletter. There is a simple spot there to enter your email address under Get Cornwall Updates, and then you'll receive our newsletter, and that newsletter tells about this offer.
Excellent. It sounds very interesting, you know, the moral case being made. That's certainly something that we never hear with these news items that come out, that there's another side of this that needs to be looked at and really considered very carefully as we come to these decisions. This article goes on, the article that I've been reading from in the StarTelegram.com, it says, if a determination is made by the FBI that civil violations of the Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act have been made, then White House may be getting what he has sought. 12 ordinary people could become the final arbiters of the question that has resulted in scientists and others around the world rejecting what President Obama has declared as, quote, settled science, unquote. Up till now, the article says, what we have seen in the development of this controversy during the past decades has been a fight in Congress that has produced no new laws directly authorizing any action to stop the climate from changing. And that's because of two principal reasons. First, a great many federal lawmakers don't believe any legislation attempting to control human behavior can make any difference, even if a global warmist alarmist are right. You just alluded to that a few minutes ago, Cal, and then says their conclusion seems to be supported by regular testimony from the administration's top people that their own science concludes no lowering of global carbon levels or temperatures being achieved from anything the United States alone can do. So there's the first point there that he's saying, here's the defense for this, is even the administration's own people said, even if people adopted what they're advocating for, that you, as you mentioned, there would be such an insignificant amount of change, especially if only the United States did it alone, that it wouldn't even it be insignificant to the total subject of global of climate change or global warming. So there's the first line of defense.
Some studies actually indicate that you could take the entire United States economy out of the world. That is, close everything down. Everybody dies. No business, no industry, nothing going on here anymore. No burning of fossil fuels to make energy. And the difference that would make in the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere would be so small that it would that the temperature change 100 years from now would be a small fraction of a degree Celsius. That would not have any significant impact on the health or life of anybody anywhere. Now, the simple fact is Congress has not acted on this precisely because it doesn't see a path to making a serious difference in people's health and safety over the long haul. And Congress is what is supposed to make law and policy, not the administration, not the EPA. Yet the EPA even admits that its own efforts on this, for instance, the Clean Power Plan to reduce our CO2 emissions from power plants by 32% by 2030, even the EPA admits that would not reduce global average temperature by more than 0.02% of a degree by the year 2100. Mm. I mean, that's not even measurable, mm. let alone does it have any impact on life.
Mm-hmm. It says in the article then that the second defense, if you will, as to why it would be difficult for them to prosecute under RICO is that although the other side, as we were just mentioning, the changes would be relatively insignificant at all, you know, even if all these changes were adopted. The second thing is the way that it would actually affect people if it was put into place is quite significant. In other words, it says it this way. Second, the job losses and higher energy bills from proposed controls on emissions and greenhouse gases bring harmful economic consequences that legislators from both parties cannot and will not support. So they're like, hey, this is going to bring very real, tangible harm to people, to the economy as a whole, but to individuals, especially the poor.
Yeah, and Kevin, this is not just theory. This is something that has already been tried and tested, and we've seen the results.
Mm-hmm.
In the United Kingdom, they adopted regulations, rules, to greatly reduce their use of fossil fuels for making electricity, and they turned increasingly to wind and solar, especially wind, and the result was huge increases in electricity rates around the United Kingdom from about 2005 through about 2014. Well, starting in 2010-11, the winter of that year, the number of what are called excess premature winter deaths, and always there are excess premature winter deaths because people become weaker in very, very cold weather, especially elderly people, but the number of those skyrocketed. And for every winter since then, essentially, you've been able to kind of to recognize that about an extra 7,000 people have died through the winter, precisely because those policies pushed electricity rates up so much higher that people couldn't afford both to get the food that they needed and to heat their homes adequately. So they left their homes much cooler than they otherwise would, and they succumbed to the cold. So this is not just theory. This is something that we have already tested. We know the results of it. And frankly, in the United States, the numbers would be much, much worse because a great deal of the United States is much colder over the winter than any part of the United Kingdom is.
Mm.
And it's just, and we have a much larger population. You know, England's population is only about, or the UK's population is about 65 million. The United States population of about 318 million. So if you take the same ratio of the population there, well, we would be seeing about six times as many extra excess premature deaths every winter. Instead of about 7,000, we'd be seeing around 42,000.
The article has this statement towards the conclusion of the article. It says this: never deterred by what Congress won't do, the president ordered his Environmental Protection Agency to proceed with massive regulatory reform of the U.S. energy industry anyway. And so it doesn't really matter what the science says. Apparently,
right. This
is more politically driven. There's a lot of money to be made in the climate change industry. And the idea of sharing the wealth, taking the money away from people that have earned it and sharing it with others, a lot of money to be made in this. And so it doesn't really matter, it seems, what the science says or what's being, you know, what the truth is about this. They're going to push forward with it either way, even to the point now of going after so-called climate denial scheme that's taking place is what Senator Whitehouse called it. Well, Cal, thank you so much.
I don't even know what climate denial would be.
Yeah, I know. I know. He just makes up these terms, but it sounds so nefarious. But it's just people who are actually looking at the science and going, hey, this thing isn't adding up, and then speaking out about it before we go ahead and spend these billions of dollars for no change whatsoever, except for in the negative side of the equation. Cal, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about these things. I'm going to give people the website again so they can go out there and get that resource that you're offering as well. But thank you so much for joining us to talk about these important issues.
Thank you, Kevin, and God bless.
You're welcome. Same to you. Let me just say that we're speaking with Dr. Cal Beissner, who is the founder and national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance. Their website is www.cornwallalliance.org. That's cornwallalliance.org. The resource that I was referring to is a resource called Fossil Fuels, The Moral Case. And so you can go out there to that website and get it. It's Kathleen Hartnett White's outstanding study on fossil fuels and the moral case for them. You can go out there, Cal said, just by a donation of any amount on their website, you'll be they'll send you this particular resource. It looks fascinating. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.